Blog Talk Radio.
But we ain't doing AC just for any old reason. We're not
We're not, you know, doing gambling. Well, I'm not saying we ain't going to do no gambling, but not saying the purpose behind being here is gambling. Tonight, the purpose for us being here is celebrating the National Association for the Advancement of Colored People's New Jersey chapter. We're celebrating our state conference. This is our annual state conference. We're picking new leadership. We're moving forward in the civil rights movement. So we figured that tonight will be a good night to come together with other members of the NAACP, talk about what this dynamic organization means and what's the state of the civil rights movement as it exists today. What is the new era of civil rights movement? What are we doing? So that's what we're doing tonight. I'm very excited about tonight's show. I'm very excited about what we're doing in this state. And to keep passing it around the room, one of our own, our brother, Tom Reynolds, the Montclair NAACP president, Los Atlantic City, New Jersey, bringing the guests, bringing the heat. Tell us about the wonderful atmosphere in beautiful Atlantic City, New Jersey. A little cold, but hey.
Well, hey, you know, the weather is not going to hold us back down here. The weather hasn't stopped because it's rainy. But we're down here. We've got a great crowd of people. We've got an energetic crowd. Tonight we're honoring pastors from the area and from across the state who have been leaders in have shown true religious leadership. So, you know, we're about to start kicking off our gospel extravaganza at Valley, and you know, we've got a great crowd that are excited to hear the word, so we're going to have a good time. And then the rest of the crowd coming up.
Amen. That's it. Now, is anybody else on the line yet? Naz.
Hey, I'm excited for what we're doing down here, and I'm glad we're live down in Atlantic City. The youth started showing up today. So we've got the college kids and the high school kids out here trying to get the training necessary to be civil rights leaders.
That's exactly what we have to do. It's about the future of the movement. You know, I mean, as well as, you know, celebrating our past movements and things that we have done, you know, it's about the future. So what we're going to do real quick is that we're going to go into a musical break for about 10 minutes. And then when we come off this interview, we're going to do a little history about our first guest.
Before we start, we got to introduce my brother. He's online now, man.
Huh?
We got my brother, brother Eddie.
Edward, are you online tonight?
Edward
L. Stanley. Edward, how is your week going, my brother?
Man, I can't buy in that, man. I got so much stuff going on, but I'm actually about to take a break, but a break just means going hard for my own stuff. Breaking from ministry, because I am going through a little burnout, so I'm taking about the rest of the month off from ministry and stuff like that, but I will be focusing on my own business stuff. So it seems like where I won't be doing ministry, I'll be doing recordings, video recordings and stuff like that. My manager pretty much got me busy for the rest of the month, but I'm taking a break, though.
Man, brother, like I said, you're the hardest working man helping you.
Did you see us over, man, on the page, man?
You're doing things, kids.
Did y'all see the young guys on the page, man? They made me so proud last Saturday, man. They showed up and showed up, man.
They did, man. Oh, my God. That was awesome, brother. First of all, those that don't check it out, please check out the Facebook page. Brother, you did your – listen, man, we're very proud of you, man. And all those young brothers, very proud, man.
Thanks, man. Thanks.
You know, leadership does not come from behind. Leadership comes from the front. You are on the front lines. You are giving that example that some of them just don't have, period.
Yeah.
How to stand as a man, how to produce and to carry yourself as a man. You are to be absolutely applauded. Man, we ain't got enough canned applause to give you applause.
Thank you, man.
We live this thing here. I mean, yeah, wow. We do talk about it, but more importantly, we live it. And like I said, you're a sterling example. And I mean, like, you know, Eddie, brother, I'm one of your biggest cheerleaders, brother. So,
thank you, man. I appreciate it.
You know, you just a man. Dad, is anybody else online?
No, I mean, right now, I mean, we got our regular listeners, you know, and that's first of all, we appreciate all those that have been tuning in and supporting the cause and what we're doing. I mean, we really love everybody, all the listeners, we really do. We appreciate it. You know, we continue. Please, don't be afraid to call in, you know, but we're here. You know, we just try to be part of the movement and make change, positive change.
That's it. That's 646-478-4507. Don't be afraid to call in now. Like I said, you
don't
know,
be scared.
So, don't be scared.
Don't be scared.
You know. You know. So look, let's go into that first musical break. When we come back off of the break, we're gonna do a little history. We start with our first guest, and we're gonna get this show cracking.
All right. So we're looking at about 10 minutes. You know, 10 minutes. Let's get back on and. Dom and Brother Dow's gonna pick the headline on this one, and Brother Eddie, I know he's gonna go in like he always does every week. But so let's just have a good time tonight, everybody.
Wait, before I'm telling you, we should have like a segment that's called Off the Chain with Edward L. Taylor. Like literally. It'd be just off the chain. I mean, literally. I digress. Let's get the party going. Let's hit some music.
Right.
Blessed is he who, in the name of charity and goodwill, shepherds the weak through the valley of darkness. For he is truly his brother's keeper and the finest of lost children. And I will strike down upon thee with great vengeance and furious anger.
Love.
You don't know just what it does to me. chimney. Wanna go higher in the magic of the music in me. There's a power in the music and it's lifting me. Wanna go higher. You don't know just what it does to me, but it keeps lifting me higher into ecstasy. Gotta keep moving to the rhythm, to the rhythm of the beat. There's a power in the music and it's lifting me. Wanna go higher in the magic of the music in me. There's a power in the music and it's lifting me. Wanna go higher.
Brother Tom Reynolds is holding down. Brother Darryl, Brother Eddie's on deck.
What is going on? First of all, before we even start, hey, Darryl, you got me?
Loud and clear. You.
Okay, okay. I want to give a special, special shout out to a friend and also another person in the industry. Big shout out to the one and only Diamond D and her show, and of course, her spouse, her better half, the brother DJ Jay Hunter. What's up, y'all, for listening to me?
Yeah.
Much love going out to you, Diamond D. So without no further ado, continue what I'm doing these boards up and down. You want to pick up the facilitation and let the listeners know where we at, what we doing. And also, I got to give another shout out. We have the one and only Miss Signature Black online. What's going on, sir? Good evening.
Hello?
Yeah, hey. You're loud and clear.
I'm sorry. Yep. Can you guys hear me?
Yeah, we hear you loud and clear.
Hey! I'm sorry. Forgive me, I am multitasking. Let me stop.
That is all right. That's all right. Now, I'm going to let you take over the facilitation while I can hold the boards down. Let our listeners know where we at for those just tuning in. Once again, big shout out to the lovely Ms. Diamond D and, of course, her better half, my man, brother DJ J. Hunter. He's celebrating his 40th birthday party. You know, we're going to be in the building, Shadow World, and, of course, the Shadow World family will come out and support. So we're going to come out there and show some love. So we're going to have a good time with his brother. You turned 40 only one time.
Yes, sir.
That's it. Go ahead, brother. What you got?
That's the way I hear it anyway. All right. Tonight's show is basically, we decided to come down to Atlantic City basically to celebrate with the New Jersey chapter of the NAACP as it goes through its state conference. So we figured that tonight would be a pretty good night for us to go into whether or not these organizations like NAACP, like National Action Network, like the Urban League, 100 Black Men, et cetera, et cetera. Do they still, one, is there a need for them today, one, And number two, are these organizations still meeting these needs? How are they growing and how are they evolving? And we're using the New Jersey chapter as a microcosm to see exactly where it has come from, where it is, and where it's going. So that's a purpose of tonight's show. So let's just go into it. Tom, first, let's go over what's going on in Atlantic City for the general public tonight, tomorrow, Sunday. So like I said, this is a big weekend. It's a holiday weekend. So Tom, just take it away. Just tell us what's going on down there for everybody to come and enjoy, especially those of us who are in New Jersey. If you are members of the NAACP, and if you're not members, to come and check out and see what we're all and what we're doing.
Well, I think the first thing that you have to understand about our state convention is this is the time when all of the leaders of the NAACP come together in New Jersey to relearn what the issues are, the current issues are, and to share best practices. There are workshops that are going on tomorrow on housing, on education, on youth leadership. We've got speakers coming in from all over the place to talk to people about economic development and everything else. So that's the first and main reason why we have these conventions. And then on top of that, it's also when the state sets its priorities for the year. When we set what the things that we're going to be, what are the issues we're going to be attacking. It's time when we come together and say, we're going to really go to this governor and ask him, what is it that made it so easy for him to minimize the division on women? What is it that made it so easy for him to raise the affordable housing funds? What is it that made it so easy to not have diverse, say, police classes for years? Those are the questions that we want, that we sit here and we figure out how we're going to do that as a state. The state conference works together with the branches to really make sure that all of them have the tools they need to make to be productive. As well as all of that, the business stuff, we still have fun. So right now, the Bosco's Brownie Grand is kicking off.
Yes, sir.
We've got the John Mitchell out here. We've got Inspirational Choir Ensemble from Atlantic City. And we also have James Fortune out here. And so we're going to have people. I actually hear them down the hall going right now. And tomorrow we've got a kickoff breakfast in the morning. We're going to be honoring our unsung heroes. We've got a legislative luncheon. We're going to have a lot of legislators showing up. We're going to be honoring the members of the state Congressman Payne. We've got the Senator Menendez coming. He's being honored as well, the president of the Pennsylvania State Conference. And we also have, we're going to be honoring the executive director of the NJEA, New Jersey Association, Vince Giordano. The keynote speaker, this is actually exciting, that we have the immediate past president of Delta Sigma Theta Sorority, Cynthia Butler McIntyre. Her flight actually lands in very soon, so she'll be coming out here to talk to us about what the Divine Nine is doing in terms of civil rights as well. I just want to keep, we still have more events coming up. I can go on and on. We'll be honoring our African American physicians. We'll be at Morgan Trio for Music and Dance tomorrow night, so we'll be having some fun there. And then also we have to figure out, I wish we could have done this early. We had a meeting, the women in the NAACP had a political forum where they had representatives from both Christie and Barbara Bono's campaign do a conversation on where the candidates stand on issues. So, it's already been a busy weekend, but it's just getting started.
Wow, that is absolutely great. That is absolutely great. Now, here's a question. All right. they sent representatives down this year. Representative. The governor has sent down a representative. I mean, I would figure that, you know, we just... I agree.
You know, we've been inviting the governor for years, and this year we got a representative. It's better than nothing, which is what we've gotten for 4 years.
I was about to just go there with that. That yes, in previous years, Governor Christie hasn't as much as sent a napkin or anything of that nature toward us, but this year we get a representative. I almost feel honored. But anyway, I don't want to take this down this road. Let's go into the brief history of the NAACP in the first place. The National Association for the Advancement of Colored People started in 1909. Its predecessor, though, was the Niagara Convention in 1908. It also stemmed off of a riot that happened in Springfield, Illinois, in 1908, where a white woman was beat by a white man. She didn't want to say that she was beaten by a white man, so she happened to blame an African-American. They then wanted to try to move the brothers from one town to another. Townspeople got word of it, and then they burnt the building down to the ground. There was days of looting and rioting, ending in lynchings, and for which then a group of concerned African-Americans and whites, primarily whites, gathered together to start the National Association for the Advancement of Colored People. And the fight has, that's when the fight began, and the fight continues on to this very day. Now, what we're missing is there was a dedication to the cause from, let's go past the Jim Crow era, going into the civil rights movement, which, you know, people look at the civil rights movement as being the 50s and the 60s. But for some strange reason, people believe that we have overcome after, you know, 1980. Once segregation was pretty much done and we can live wherever we wanted to, for some strange reason, we felt that we've arrived. But things are still different. And things are still not fair and not equal, and there are still prejudices. I mean, even for the President of the United States of America, where people can just blatantly try to disregard him, period, based upon the fact that he's African American. If it's something that affects the leader of the free world, how do you think it affects the over 13 million people in America who happen to be African American, or any other minority for that matter? Because it's not just an organization about it. It started as the National Association for the Advancement of Colored People, but it's more than just about black folks' rights or black folks' issues. It's something that goes a bit further and goes a bit deeper. Edward? Eddie, can you hear me?
Yeah, I hear you. I apologize. I muted my phone. Go ahead.
I was about to say, am I alone in the universe?
You was about to say, I was saying stuff and y'all wasn't replying. We was both about to say. But I forgot I muted my phone.
Well, Edward, please continue, say what you were saying before during your muted session that nobody got to enjoy.
Probably last year even, I wanted to know more about the NAACP and its relevancy even now. I definitely see racism currently going on, especially in the president cabinet in the presidential cabinet. It's sad to see. Unfortunately, I was just saying earlier in the week that I think the president being in office kind of unveiled the fact that we have some serious racism going on currently. They are just so disrespectful to the title and the position, and it's just they don't have any remorse for it, and they try to make it seem like it's not racism, but it's like there's no logistics behind what they're saying, what they're doing, and how they're going about what they're doing. And it's never been done the way that they're doing it towards any other president or president prior to him. And the only thing that's different is his color, his skin color. So
absolutely.
It's disturbing. It's really disturbing. But at the same time, like I said, it unveils our true colors, if you will, for lack of a better term, where we stand in America nowadays. What the NAACP can do about that, I don't really think they can do anything. I mean, you're talking about the president of the United States. They're disrespecting. So it kind of makes you feel like, well, what in the world can anyone do for us if we can't even get respect as a president? I don't know. But I would love to know, like, because I know that the NAACP is not just for color people, even though that's in the name. I'm kind of interested and intrigued by the topic and would love to know more about what the NAACP stands for, what their plans and their goals are for now, short-term and long-term, and if I get enough information that is intriguing enough, I might end up being a member of it by the end of this show. So time will tell.
All right.
Yep. Good. You might have that. Well, you know what the NAACP stands for, and make sure you get that membership application as soon as possible. But you know, we really need to look at what's going on in this country, and the week. You know, like you said, the Congress has not been respecting the president, but there's this. I love the way this was put to me once. So in the 50s, we dealt with Jim Crow, but today we're dealing with his ugly nephew, James Crow Esquire. And James Crow Esquire has his law degree and his lobbying firm, and you know, he doesn't say the N-word, but he does know how to let you know that you're not going to get a job someplace and that you can't afford to move into his gentrified area, and you can't... you can't, you know, break his glass ceiling, and more recently with the health care law coming into place, you can't get a full time job because then we have to give you health care. So what is the NAACP doing now? I think one of the greatest things that's happened recently is our chairwoman Rosenbrock put out her game changers, the five areas that the NAACP has to focus on if we're going to move forward as an organization. And those areas, you know, the more and more I think about it, the more and more we fight about these issues, you start noticing they're all interconnected. Education, economic development, health, political activation, and criminal justice. So if we can, you know, deal with the education issue, we can hopefully give every one of our kids a chance to succeed in this new service economy. If we can deal with the health issues, we can make sure that we're not at the bottom of all the health statistics. We're not leading the fight in, that we're not leading the race in heart issues and AIDS and everything else, but we're ahead of the curve on all of them. If we can deal with the political action, then maybe we can get some of our legislators to start listening to us and understanding that we, you know, we have a voice just as much as anyone else in this country. And if we can deal with the criminal justice issue, we can let people know that even though right now, I mean, we're 10% of the population, we're 90% of the prison population, how do we say that we have so much of the prison population when the statistic says we have not committed any crime at any higher rate than anyone who's white, anyone who doesn't look like us? So why are we the ones who are sitting in the prison cell? So we can't afford the lawyers. I think our state president actually has one of the greatest comments that I would love to repeat, which is James Harris says that no one has no one's stolen a car on their way to work. So let's make sure that we can get all our people back to work, and that means talking to our legislators, bringing back that political side, making sure our kids are educated, back to the education issue, making sure that we're healthy enough to go to work and stay in work, and keeping those out of prison. I mean, it's just all is protected. So that's what the NACP is doing today.
A question. We clarified that in the NAACP is not solely for African American people. What is the NAACP doing? I mean, can you name anything that they've done that wasn't an issue for African Americans, being as though they're not just for the African American rights, therefore equality, if you will? What is it that you all have done to represent someone outside of the African American industry?
Well, how about sexual pest control laws? Pushing our Congress people. We've had a recent campaign to push our legislators for acceptable gun control laws. I mean, we saw, even though we understand that 83 black children are killed every week, we saw the tragedy in Sandy Hook. Guns do not affect just black people. We're now in New Jersey, we're campaigning to raise the minimum wage. Even though black people are the ones who usually have the lower wage jobs, anyone who works at a McDonald's or any place that decides that minimum wage is all they have to give, they're the ones who are dealing with that can be directly affected by minimum wage. Then there's drug policy. We're working with the Drug Policy Alliance to deal with the drug laws that are happening, and making sure that there's no reason why one drug, where the only difference in taking further and water and boiling it is now an 18-to-1 difference than prison sentencing difference than any other drug. All these issues, even, I think one of the biggest things you have to understand, a lot of these issues affect us predominantly, but they affect everyone as well. We are not more people who are out here doing drugs or who are being unfairly treated in the court system or having our savings lost to bankers who decide that they're going to be take unjust actions or unfair actions. Everyone's affected. We saw America's wealth dry up a few years ago. And so it hit the minority community hard. It hit everyone's pocket. It hit everyone's job. It hit everyone's community. I guess we just need to remind people that the NAACP isn't a black organization. The first president wasn't black. The organization it even has a mission statement that we're going to fight for the equal protection of education, housing, social, economic, and political rights of all people, including especially people of color, but for all people.
The mission statement of NAACP is, the mission of the National Association for the Advancement of Colored People is to ensure political, educational, social, economical equality of rights of all persons and to eliminate racial hatred and racial discrimination. In the mission statement, it has no specific bearing on race or creed or color of any individual person, just that everyone should have the same opportunities as anyone else. Such as, right now, also I know that the NAACP is the national branches headstrong in the North Carolina fight for voting equality.
Because the voting rights issue.
He only changed the voting rights in the state of North Carolina. They're also trying to do it in Texas as well. And they're also fighting for the rights of women in Texas to be able to have Planned Parenthood, Susan B. Anthony, being able to have an abortion if it's so be their choice. Women's health issues, things of that nature that's going on in Texas. So, in different areas, they are fighting about different things. Now, yes, do they affect the African American community? Yes. But does it affect poor, lower socioeconomic families across America, despite gender or color or what have you? Absolutely. So, yeah, I mean, it does affect us, yes, but the problems that affect us just affect people generally. If you live below a certain economic level in certain aspects, it affects you. If you are targeted based upon you're a minority and they're trying to eliminate your right to vote, that affects you. That affects the bottom line. We're fighting to try to keep Obamacare and trying to support our president in that measure that's already been approved. It's already gone to the House and to the Senate. It's already been upheld by the Supreme Court. But for some strange reason, the Congress feels that it can hold the country hostage based upon it. The NAACP is on the front lines of that fight. So does the organization work? Yes. Can it be better? Yes. But the way that we improve is by our steadfast involvement. I think that a lot of us have, let's say, taken our foot off the gas, if you know what I mean. We don't see the urgency anymore. So because, you know, nobody's trying to drag you out your house and lynch you in the middle of the street, it's okay. So the fact that you, you know, you're thinking nigger, but you're not saying it, it's all right. So, you know, if that's the case, everything is gravy. So, but like Eddie, I think you said it best. When Barack Obama became president, all those deep underlying prejudices for a lot of people bubbled up to the top. You know, how dare this nigger be president of all the United States? You know,
I was going to say it so we knew exactly what they were thinking.
Absolutely. So, I mean, you understand that there is a backward ideology I'm not going to say all members of the Tea Party or the extreme right wing of the Republican Party, but I'm going to say a great many of the vocal members. I'm going to repeat the word vocal members of the right wing Tea Party member, Tea Party card carrying members of the Republican Party that's in Congress and some that are in the Senate right now. It has absolutely nothing to do with the debate over whether poor people have the right to health care, just like anyone else. It is more about the fact that this nigger keeps giving these people things. And when they say these people, you know what they mean by these people. Even though the majority of poor people in America are Anglo-Saxons. The majority. They're not African-Americans. They're Anglo-Saxons, by far. But we have become the poster children for all that ills a certain branch of middle-class white society. That, you know, the reason why the plant closed in your neighborhood is because the president is giving stuff to niggers. You know, exactly the way that it's being presented. If you want a good dose of it, I always say watch Fox News. If you want a reason to join the NAACP, watch Fox News. Fox News will inspire you to, you know, join, if not NAACP, National Action Network, $100 Black Men, United Urban League, you know, pick one. Pick them all. You know, where do we fight? But understand, each of these organizations, they do some things similarly, some things different. Some things in a different manner or in a different arena than the other. All, in my opinion, this is just my opinion, are all quality organizations, and they all fulfill a purpose. I feel that the NAACP reach is broader. And I would say that's probably the only, like, well, National Action Network is more, let's say, pinpoint specific.
Mm-hmm.
Where the NAACP is broad. But both are wonderful, both are effective, and I advocate both. I stand in both, with both, involved in both, a member of both. But understanding that it is, and I know many people who are members of both. 100 black men. I need to say nothing more than that. The United Urban League, like mostly it's economics. It's economics, housing, it's education, and those are their pinpoint focal points.
Okay.
And you know, these are, like I said, we need to know more about these organizations. That you're absolutely right. Before you become a part of anything, you have to understand what it is, where it came from, how it came about. And like I said, this is the time and the place, you know, for discussion. And as what this show advocates is, as men, we need to be leaders.
That's right.
And in that leadership, we need to be able to galvanize as a group on specific things. The NAACP became, it's one of the main reasons it became an entity, and it became the largest entity of African Americans over the years, has been because, okay, you can do something to Dow, or you can do something to Eddie, or Tom, or Wayne, or Hassan, or DeLacy. You can do anything to us as individuals. I can only stand up and say but so much without the threat of reprisal. Economic reprisal, physical reprisal, even my very liberty or my very life. There are certain things that there are reprisals that could come upon me as an individual. The organization, as an entity, cannot, because it's much bigger than an individual. And because of the involvement in the mass numbers of people who are involved and the structure that it has, it operates without the fear of any of these things. Even though it affects the members as individuals, it doesn't affect the body.
Mm.
And when that body can act on our behalf and on our bequest. And that's why a lot of leaders in these organizations in the past were preachers, based upon the fact that as preachers, there would be no reprisal based upon their actions, based upon the fact that their support came from the very community that they're representing. So they could speak of the injustices that happens towards you and me. Because if you said it or I said it, so you can fire me tomorrow. Somehow, you know, my car that was perfectly functional, you pulled me over, you knocked out my taillight, said that my taillight was out, that's why you pulled me over. I asked you what's going on, you proceeded to take me out of the car and beat me because I resisted arrest. That could happen to me. Now, the fact of the matter is, with my pastor, did it happen? But there's more focus on it if it did, if it were, based upon the multitude of people who stand in support of this one individual.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's why they were oftentimes leaders of these organizations, based upon the fact of the multitude that he represented. And still to this day, the church itself is a large pool for a lot of these organizations, based upon the fact that basically we just doing what Jesus said to do. We going to feed our poor. We going to clothe our poor. We going to check out our brothers that are locked away. You know, just because you're locked away, you're not thrown away. We ain't forgot about you. You know, we're going to take care of our sick. We're going to take care of our ill.
You brought up earlier what's going on in North Carolina. The North Carolina State President, Reverend Dr. William Barber, he said something recently when he was talking about the gay rights issue, and he said, why is it that people who seem to be of God speak so much about what God says so little, so little about what God says so much? And you know, you're right. We're supposed to be out here feeding the poor, clothing the naked.
Yep.
And that, I don't even know what to say.
I mean, no, you're absolutely right. That's what the Bible, that's what Jesus mandated us to do. That's what the Bible mandated us to do. And for those who are Christians, you understand that. That's what we are to do. And the funny thing is about the Tea Party is that most of them are the evangelical right. They are Bible Belt Christ-loving individuals. But I wonder what Jesus are they loving, though. That's the part that for the life of me, I can't figure it out. But, you know, maybe that's just me. That's just a personal gripe. It has nothing to do with it. Not endorsed by the show. It's totally me. I just don't get it. It's okay. But, like I said, we need to examine these groups and we need to examine these things further. Sick, you got anything you want to share, darling?
Oh, you guys are doing so great. Part of the problem is that, like you said, to me, people become complacent. If it doesn't touch me physically, I don't care. I'm not going to get involved. I'm not going to say anything about it. I'll grumble about it at the water cooler, per se. But as far as getting active, people don't get active. And I'm constantly telling people, if something is wrong in a situation with a politician, a store, so you go to that store, talking to other people who just going to help you wallow in your own self-pity is not going to get anything accomplished. People need to get out, make a conscious decision that, yes, by all means, I am my brother's keeper. Because whereas I may be standing here today, I may fall down tomorrow. People have to stop thinking about just self. Get past the tip of your nose and understand that you can be affected by anything and everything that happens in this country, especially in this retarded, backwoods, need-to-be-renamed country.
Backwoods?
Yeah, this country has pissed me off these last few weeks. The shutdown, I'm not understanding.
And see, these are the things that these are the kind of questions that I do have, the difficult questions. I'm a very fair person, and when it comes to the NAACP, are they selective in who they follow and support or back? Because I know for sure through research and history that Rosa Parks was not the first person to or first female to sit down and get arrested for the bus situation, but there were two people that did it prior to her, but they didn't fit the mold of the person to bat. She gets all of the attention, whereas the first person, if I'm not mistaken, had alcoholism issues, and the second person had children out of wedlock. So they didn't back those two females because they didn't fit the look that they wanted to back as far as the movement. Now I can understand timing and things being in place and everything like that, but isn't that kind of contradictory to decide that they are doing what it is that we stand for, but they don't necessarily fit the picture that we want to portray in order for us to go ahead and back these people up? It's just little stuff like that kind of bothers me. If I'm fair, I'm fair. There's no exceptions to the rule.
And Eddie, I was talking about whenever there's a topic on the show, in case you guys wonder, I go out and do my little woman on the street thing, and I ask different people about the topic. And basically what I got was these organizations only back headliner stuff. They don't like the whole thing with Trayvon Martin. I mean, you would have thought that was the first kid ever treated like that, and he wasn't.
Yeah.
But you would think, oh, my God, he's the first case. We got to look at this. He was not the first case. There is an attorney who quit her firm who handles these cases up in the northeast region of the United States, and this is all she's been doing for like 10 or 15 years. But I don't see them backing her. If it's not a major, if it's not going to get them headlines and news stories, if it's not going to make a difference for them where they can say, we're doing this, so join this organization, it seems like certain organizations are only going to back the headlines, and that's what people are getting. Now, I want to give a shout-out to the 100 Black Men, every chapter in the United States, because what I heard was 100 Black Men are at least true to their communities. Where that chapter is, they're taking care of those issues in that community. They're beating the ground. They're raising the money. They're holding community events. They're reaching out to that community.
So I actually kind of want to go back to the Rosa Parks thing, and for a few reasons. You're right. Rosa Parks was the one who fit the mold, and that was sort of the status quo on how you fought civil rights in the 50s and 60s. You found the first one, brother. The honest first woman who seemed like she was the perfect mother, the hard worker, and she did what she was supposed to do. She went to church on Sundays, and she had nothing wrong. And for some reason, this perfect woman could not sit in the front of the bus. Because they knew the next thing that would happen would be an attack of her character. As long as her character was intact, then that couldn't happen. So the first article that's going to come out, the one who had children out of wedlock, is, you know, unmarried woman gets arrested, if it even makes the headline. But if this perfect church woman couldn't sit in the front of the bus, that might be something. But then it also spoke to what the power of the NACP could do, which was to scale an issue. That the NACP could take this issue of this perfect church woman, which every black person understood, couldn't sit in the front of the bus. Well, then all of our members now need to stop riding the bus. She was the secretary of her branch. She was a woman who everyone had to stop at in the NACP when there's time to get their membership together. So that's one of the reasons that they used Rosa Parks. And another thing, you also have to look at the way history happened. We all know the story of Paul Revere riding all through Massachusetts. Well, he only rode 12 miles. He didn't go too far. There's another person named Israel Bissell who made the real ride from Boston all the way through down to warn the rest of the colonies about the British coming. But Israel Bissell doesn't rhyme where the midnight ride of Paul Revere does. So that's what we know about Paul Revere and not Israel Bissell. So you have to take history with a grain of salt. Now, moving forward, I think more recently, when it comes to the criminal justice issues and overpopulation of our prisons with people who look like us, that's when a lot of organizations have started to realize you can't use the Rosa Parks perfect church mother as your poster child for civil rights issues anymore, because you're not going to find someone who went to jail one and had a bad rap and get enough of them to make some class action or whatever. You're gonna have people who are like, oh well, I smoked a little weed, and it's like, ah damn, well we gotta deal with that. And no, that's the real situation. They smoked a little weed, they end up in jail. And now they can't take college loans. So, you know, we really need to look at what, you know, we might have to change what our tactics are. You're right, that's a Trayvon issue. It does seem like Trayvon was the first one, but at the same time, we were able to take that to scale because Trayvon was this kid coming home like Emmett Till with some candy and a drink and ended up dead. Who thought going to 7-Eleven was punishable by death in this country?
I mean, it's a case of the greasy wheel. You know, the squeaky wheel gets the grease, and it does. Not saying it's fair, not saying that it's right, but it's accurate. The NAACP has hundreds of chapters across this country. It has state conferences. It has local chapters. It has a regional chapter that covers all the other chapters. And when something happens, and this comes from us, this once again comes back to that apathy and not putting our pedal, putting the pedal to the metal. When something does happen, if you don't go to your chapter, nine times out of ten, that chapter president, now Tom, you can speak on this from being a chapter president yourself. If nobody informs you of an injustice, unless it's egregious, unless it is something that is sensational, nobody knows.
We mentioned it earlier when we were talking about the gun control. We lose 83 of our kids every week to gun violence.
Mm-hmm.
But we didn't hear about gun issues until, the big ones happened. So right. Sandy Hook, till any of those larger
countries. Colorado or Columbine previously, what have you, right. So the squeaky wheel, like I said, so basically, like I said, we have chapters all over in every area. There is an NAACP chapter that covers your area. If you know of something that has happened, and it's a low-down, dirty shame, it's a crying shame, why don't anybody ever do nothing about it? The NAACP don't do nothing about these type of things, bop, 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 bop. How do you know that they know? Now, if you go, well, I went to the chapter president, or I went to a member, da-da-da-da-da, they have their meetings on the third Thursday, a month and such and such. I went there, and I shared with them what happened, and they did absolutely nothing. Then you have every right to say everything in the world, and something needs to be done about it. And if you bring it to the right person's attention, trust me, something will be done about it. I guarantee that. But 9 times out of 10, things happen, and people like to commiserate. People like to whine and bitch and moan for all intents and purposes. They like to say, oh, this is terrible. This is awful. This is horrendous. But, okay, what are we going to do about it?
Mm-hmm.
Because if it happened to you yesterday, what's to say it won't happen to me tomorrow?
Mm-hmm.
What's to say that it won't? So, I mean, like I said, am I my brother's keeper? Well, if I'm truly my brother's keeper and something happened to my brother, I understand. I'm standing right there. You ain't got to look for me. I'm the easiest one to find. You ain't got to look for me. So, same thing goes with these organizations. If you feel that the leadership of, a certain organization doesn't necessarily reflect your concerns, by all means, you need to be able to have a say-so in that matter. Like, for us in New Jersey, our state conference is picking new leadership now, which we'll go into the second half of the show. The local branches, next year, you got every opportunity in the world to say what you want about whom you want. If you feel that it's not going well, if you feel it's not going in the right direction, all you got to do is gather a certain number of fellow members who feel the same way, that this is not going in the direction that it needs to go into, and this is why. We have, like I say, every 2 years, we can change course. We can just change course, and that's what we need to do. But if not, if you don't vote, this is just like same thing with general elections. If you don't go out and participate in the process, don't complain.
You got exactly what you asked for, Peter.
Exactly. This fool, he don't lead me. He don't represent me. Well, okay, let me ask you a question. Are you African American?
Yep.
Do you live in this area? Yep. Well, he does represent you. Whether you acknowledge him or not is irrelevant. But he's speaking for you. Now, if you feel that he's not representing you correctly, if you feel he's not representing the needs and the views of your family, of your household, of your street, of your block, of your city, well, you need to open up your mouth and say so about it. Or, if not, then okay. That's a choice, too. You can just ignore it. But this is what our problem has been for far too long. For the last 30 years, we've had a tendency to ignore way too much.
Yeah.
We have a tendency to just, you know, write a blank check and just, okay, you handle it from here. You know, I'm not gonna take care of my yard anymore. I'm not gonna mow my lawn or cut my hedges or whatever. I'm gonna find somebody around here who will do it for $15 or $20. Here you go. Take care of this for me, and I won't be inconvenienced by it. We have been spoiled to no end, and we don't like to be inconvenienced. Guess what? This park, it's inconvenient. I guarantee you. There's going to be a part in this life, in this world, if you're going to go through something, and you're going to be inconvenient. Now, it's about what you do about it. Not whether it happens or not. It's going to happen. Mm-hmm. But it's what you do about it. And you'll be surprised who is watching you, who's paying attention to you while you're going through your trials. You learn so much more about people when they're going through than when it's sunny out. Everybody can be perfect when it's good. It's when times get rough, when things are going down, and you need to stand up, but you just got punched in the stomach. Okay. That shows character. And for those who, but there are some people who join these organizations, they join it with the express purpose of being seen. They want you to look at them. They want to be important. They want to have a title. At their job, they are nothing special. All you do all day is go around here and deliver mail. That's pretty much your job. There's no big title in what you do. You just do your job, and that's it. You sell stereos at Macy's. That is your job, period. Or Best Buy, or wherever you're working, you do your job, and you come home. When you're home, you just that nigga that takes out the garbage. That's who you are. Pay the rent, take out the garbage. Oh, yeah, the garbage disposal ain't working. Okay, fine, I'll hire a plumber. That's who you are. But when you join some of these organizations and you get a title, you are the president, you're the chairperson, you're the vice president, you are the head of this committee, that committee, you're the director of this or that, you have an air of importance to you, and you get to live out your fantasies through some sort of delusion that you have in your mind. And some people are just like that. But it's for us, those who don't mind rolling up our sleeves, who don't mind getting dirty, who don't mind going to work, and who don't mind standing up, need to do just that. Need to stand up. Need to man up and go and take your rightful place at the table. The table's right there. The chair sits right there. And if you feel that the person who's sitting in the chair isn't representing you correctly, then you are. Edward, please say something. Let me get off my soapbox.
That's exactly why I want to know more about it. Because my thing, the way I operate is, if I hear about your organization, think you have a great organization, but don't feel that you are doing what I think your organization should be doing, I'll join your organization, do my role, and then I'll take over the organization and do it the way it's supposed to be done. I'm just trying to figure out if it's worth, if it's something that I would want to be a part of, to the point where I would say, okay, they're not doing it right, let me go ahead and join, and then end up being the president, take over, and then show them the correct way to do it and create a system to where someone could just plug in after me and continue to do it the correct way. That's what I did for my fraternity. That's what I did for all the other things that I've I had problems with the way they ran it. Just took over and did it the right way and created a system to allow it to sustain itself.
Brother, between me and Tom, we got bylaws. So, you know, we can send you a copy of the bylaws because, I mean, like, I don't know necessarily if anybody wants to hear us go over this one, but like, I got the bylaws for the organization.
I have a question for you guys in Jersey.
Yes, ma'am.
I'm not going to lie. I'm a little pissed at NAACP and ACLU right now.
Okay.
Do not answer email. And for everybody listening, if you work at that organization, understand, I'm going to be a pain in your ass. I hate being ignored. I send you a serious email from my business, and I can't get a response. It's nothing for me to knock on your damn door. Why don't you people answer email? You put an email address out there like, if you contact us, we will answer you. What, damn, send me something even if it just says shut up.
Oh, my.
That's the problem I have with these large organizations that want to be seen and say we're doing this and we're doing that and we're here for the people.
Did you send it to the national branch of Maryland? Or
you know, I don't have good sense. I sent it to the national. I sent it to the regional for what I was talking about, what I needed some attention to, brought to. And I'm like, okay, I have sent out 50-some emails. I can't get anybody to answer me. Lo and behold, when you open the holidays are over and I have nothing better to do. They don't answer. That's my problem. They don't answer. And then everybody want to say, oh, well, my Congress is taking care of it. Oh, the NAACP is saying, what the hell are they taking care of? I got to see it.
Wow.
I'm having to march on Washington to get a damn answer. I'm a little pissed right now because I'm looking at the email. I'm really pissed.
It sounds like you had an experience with trying to contact NAACP.
Really?
Can we get one more damn please?
I've been trying to have this crank for 6 months. It's worse than Dayton Virgin. Y'all need to come up off with some answers.
Oh, so here we go.
Wow.
And I understand that every organization has their chapter and every chapter has their purpose, but I'm sick of the damn personal agendas. Get on board with something that's going to help somebody other than your title, your next charity organization, or your picture being on the front page or page 6 of the business section. That's all I want.
Absolutely. Like I said, there are individuals. In any organization, in any structure where you have more than 3 or 4 people, you will find individuals who enjoy the title but don't necessarily embrace the mission. Title.
You're right. Taking account that this is a volunteer effort. None of us are paid. Starters. So I don't know what the situation for the person who you called is, but I know that if I'm at my 9-to-5, I can't pick up my phone.
I'm gonna let that happen. But for 6 months, you can't call me.
Right.
You work at this organization. Come on with another excuse for him. I'm ready.
I'm not trying to make excuses, but I'm just saying that, you know, it is a volunteer organization, that we've got very, you know, depending on, we've got some dedicated people that are, you know, volunteering their time for this organization. I know my executive committee and myself and people who I like to work with throughout the state are very dedicated to what they do. That doesn't mean that there's not someone out there who is sitting on a title alone, but a lot of us are at least trying to do the mission. I'm trying to do the work.
Absolutely.
I understand everybody, and I understand that's volunteer because I've done that. I've sat in those positions where I got to do my regular job, and then I promise to make this commitment to do something else. But if I'm going to make a commitment to do something, it's not just so I can go back to my firm and say, this is the boards I'm on, these are the charities I had. You guys need to follow suit. But I'm not doing anything with it. I've got emails that I set up for my charities and for my organizations. You're going to tell me I don't have enough time to
answer to somebody? I understand. You read the 9 to 5, that's cool. And I'm sick of, in this day and age of technology, everybody's too damn busy to type two words. I promise you, they could say shut up, and I would leave them alone, because at least they responded.
Right. Oh, my God. Matter of fact, Sig, I tell you what, like I said, I am slammed with a crazy weekend. Let's talk Monday, and let me see if I can help facilitate this along for you. I don't like
you. You know what? I'm going to go one step further, because my issue is not in your region and somewhere else. I'm going to take care of them. Now I'm going to have to put on my attorney hat for them because they pissed me off. But I'm going to find a cause in y'all area, and I'm going to put y'all to the test. Don't fail. Do not fail.
I got a quick question, though. Are you a member of the NAACP?
Yes, I am.
Well, that is good. I am glad to hear that. And then you can go down to your branch and tell them that they need to start responding to your email. I think it's hard to say a whole organization should stay on it because somebody didn't respond to their email. I know I respond to mine, and I get emails for things that take. I got an email today that's for an issue that's taking place in another state, but I'll respond to it.
You know, and I'm not faulting the whole organization, and I would never do that for just one email. 53 emails to 20 different people.
Wow.
So it just kind of puts a little sour note in my mouth, and because I've been really busy, I haven't had time to just have personal knock on their door thing. But like I said, after the holidays, they were hoping to answer me before then. Because
I'm
not that person that's going to be quiet and go away, and I don't mind paying for a full page ad in anybody's newspaper or anybody's blog, and I type 100 some words a minute, I will get them.
I really hope you can take your branch to task and remind them what the mission and the vision of this organization is.
Lord have mercy. But the time is flying by. I tell you what, let's go to a musical break real quick, and then hopefully we'll have a couple of guests online before we go off from this wonderful show that we're having this night. On the movement. So, Nav.
Radio show.
Are you there?
Yeah, I'm right here, brother.
Brother, let's hit them off with a quick. Let's hit them with a musical interlude for a minute, and then when we
hey,
come
no
back.
Doubt, man. Let's have some fun. I'm just enjoying this whole thing, brother. I'm surprised he didn't go in yet.
Yeah. Let me take it out,
thing. Nah, yeah, but yeah, I am totally enjoying the whole conversation. It's giving me a different enlightenment to what's happened behind the scenes in the movement as far as the NAACP. I'm just enjoying the whole thing. So I guess right now we're gonna have some fun. We're gonna have some fun, definitely. Just real quick, I just want to give once again another shout out. That's got another text. Big shout out once again to the lovely Ms. Diamond D and DJ Bobby, having a 40th birthday party in Jersey. Let me see if I got this mission correct. At the Rail House at 1443 Irving Street in Rahway, New Jersey. Posted by Diamond D. She has a show. I believe that we've been checking it out, and I know that the signature checked it out as well. The live performances with Ms. Dawn Williams, Cassio, and many more. You know, it'll be some good music, grown folks stuff going down. Tickets to $10 in advance, and admission will be at the door for more. You'll need the tickets up front. The doors open at 9 p.m. until, so once again, big shout out to another talk show, what they do, in supporting us. And, you know, we all trying to support each other. You know, it's just black people trying to make a difference and be positive, and we really love that support. So, well, without no further ado, we're going through a little music right now, and I guess we're going to come back with our special guest. Is that right, D?
That's what we're looking to do.
Let's go. Yeah. We'll definitely have our mouth on side.
Okay, so let's use the videos on short 10 minutes and be back.
Summertime.
My only desire is making you mine.
the original, 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 nasty, nasty.
Once again, Blue, just tuning in. Once again, welcome to the Man Up Talk Show. We are doing it live down at the Valley with the NAACP, the brothers and the sisters on deck, and of course, all the listeners tuning in. You know, once again, the Man Up Talk Show. You go to Mr. Nash with the panel of brothers, sisters, and all the listeners. So, once again, welcome back to the ride. Welcome to the show. Brother Dow, we are back, big dog.
Yes, sir. We have got the Man Up Show is still on the air. Best internet show running today. All right. Now, Sean.
Yeah. Our guest is here.
All right. Take it away.
All right. Well, I'd like to take this chance to introduce who has been one of the greatest state conference presidents, at least while I've been involved, Mr. James E. Hayes. Former dean at Montclair State University, and hopefully soon going to be moving upward and onward. But let me introduce you to Mr. James Harris.
Good evening, and thank you very, very much for the opportunity of sharing some views about the National Association for the Advancement of Colored People at 103 years old.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. Mr. Harris, how are you this evening? This is Darrell Harrington. How have you been?
I am always good when we get together to talk about civil rights, and we're particularly blessed this evening to be inspired by some incredible gospel singers, and we're honoring some of the outstanding pastors and ministers in the state of New Jersey who do so much to solve some of the problems and concerns that have always been at the top of the agenda for the NAACP. So I'm doing well.
Amen. Amen. Continue on.
Well, some of the things that I think is important for us to consider as we gather tonight in Atlantic City, where Fannie Lou Hamer made her famous statement back in the 60s that said that she was tired of being, she was sick and tired of being sick and tired. And we find that some of the things that inspired Fannie Lou Hamer to become so bold, brave, and outspoken has returned to our agenda in New Jersey and throughout this country. Like the rest of the country, it appears that the election of President Obama once annoyed some folks, but having been elected twice has really made people go off the deep end and make it seem reasonable to them that they should close the government down because the governor refuses, I mean the president refuses to concede to their outrageous thought about denying health care to millions of people who otherwise would not have the option of getting medical attention.
So I thought we could take a moment and just talk about some of the issues that are happening right here in New Jersey. And I mean, I know you've had a chance to ponder on what this governor has done the last 4 years, and then also talk about, you know, we've got two elections coming up.
We find that this governor has been absolutely destructive to civil rights and social justice in the state of New Jersey. Not only did he remove the only African American on the New Jersey Supreme Court, but now we find that there's no Latino on the Supreme Court, unfathomable 5 years ago. This is a governor who thinks by executive order he can eliminate a Supreme Court decision. Thank goodness to the Fair Share Housing Group and Mr. Francis, Kelly Francis, and the people from Fair Share Housing and some other advocates. We've taken the governor to court three times, and the courts have ruled three times that he's broken the law. Not only that, but we had to threaten to take him back to court to get more African Americans on the state police. The class that graduated last year only had two African Americans. But with the threat of taking him back to court, where we know we would have won, this class had a record number of 12 African Americans who started out of the 24. But we still have the issue of no African American women who graduated in this class. In addition to that, this governor has absolutely been destructive to our urban agenda, and somehow or another thinks that it's okay to take a few minority urban kids out of failing schools and put them into highly regarded private schools while taking the money from the public to pay for that private education. But the question that the NAACP has to be concerned about is what happens to the students who are left behind? Why can't we fix all of the schools for all of the students? But it's becoming very clear to some of us in places like Camden, Newark, Patterson, and Jersey City, where the state has been in control, that it's more about money than it is about closing the academic achievement gap for educational equity. If you look at what happens, and in fact, I would encourage you to take some particular attention to Camden, New Jersey. You know, Camden shouldn't exist in the state of New Jersey. It's one of the poorest cities in the country, one of the most dangerous in the country. But according to my understanding, when federal monies and state monies are allocated, it generally goes to those communities where you have the highest level of poverty. Well, if the money that went into Camden didn't fix the problem for Camden people, the NAACP is interested in who got that money and for what purpose did they spend the money since the problem in Camden hasn't gotten any better. And then, of course, we also have this huge problem of the, gun violence. And the NAACP believes that this gun violence is a an extension of this war on drugs that has turned into a war on black and poor people and urban people. You see, if you do the business of drugs, you've got to have some protections to protect your product. And if, in order to have people protecting the product, you've got to have a group of people to help you out. So you form these groups called gangs. And somehow or another, as a guy who spent 26 years in the military, my last MOS was nuclear biological warfare, which required a top secret clearance. I believe that we know exactly where those guns and drugs are coming from. I think we understand why those drugs and guns end up in our communities and why so many of our people have joined gangs in order to protect the turf. And this is a very, very dangerous and deadly combination. In a city like Camden, when I went there last year to fight for the police department, there were 67 crosses on the lawn in front of City Hall representing 67 homicides in Camden, New Jersey in the 12-month period. And we're seeing the same type of patterns in Newark. We're seeing the same type of patterns in Asbury Park. We're seeing the same type of patterns in Irvington. Wherever there's a deep concentration of poor people and poverty and race, we find all of the things that are destructive and not in the best interest of their safety and their healthy existence.
So, you know, with all that being said, we're here in Atlantic City, and we have a storm kind of coming through right now. And it kind of reminds me about what's happened a year ago in Atlantic City when there was another storm that came through. Do you have any thoughts about, you know, what's been going on with the repairing of the shore and restoration there and how Atlantic City and the coastal cities have been treated?
Well, I find it very interesting that the President of the United States of America has come to New Jersey twice. But he didn't go to Atlantic City. He went to Brigantine. Well, the difference between Brigantine and Atlantic City is that Atlantic City has a predominantly black population with a black mayor.
Mm-hmm.
And most certainly it is the economic engine of the state of New Jersey. So why wouldn't a governor take the president to a city that's run, that's led by black folks? I think that's a racial issue. When you look at who is getting the contracts to rebuild the Jersey Shore, we sent some people out to take photos and to look at what the group looked like that's rebuilding. There are hardly any African-Americans on any of those jobs. And we find that we believe that those contracts are going to rich white men who own companies that are capable of making contributions to the governor in his run for the White House. That's clearly discrimination, and we're going to pursue that from the standpoint of whether or not federal monies are being used to in a discriminatory way. But as we sit in Atlantic City, one of the greatest concerns of the residents in Atlantic City is that some of the properties that were destroyed by Sandy still have not been repaired, and they haven't gotten the money to repair them. For example, if you require that those houses be elevated, you've got to have a decent amount of money to have that job performed. Well, if you don't have the money, you can't raise the elevation of the house. You're stuck with the house that's in Pearl. We also have a large number of people in Atlantic City. In fact, the majority of people in Atlantic City are not homeowners, they're renters. And we found that we had to go to the state and tell the state that we know that they didn't put money in their grant in order to help people recover their belongings if they were renters. And luckily for us, Fair Share Housing and some other allies, we were able to get the federal government to require that the governor's proposal include more resources and monies for people who had lost their properties and who had been disadvantaged in Atlantic City, and particularly Asbury Park. We have the same type of dynamics. We're not getting the same type of presence of effort and energy and commitment of money so that those people who happen to be overwhelmingly poor and African-American can get their houses repaired. And we're talking about possible long-term, if not permanent, dislocation of some of these people who, whose biggest investment is the house. So these are some of the things that we see, and it's not subtle anymore. It's kind of in-your-face racial discrimination and disrespect for people who happen to be urban poor of any race, but it's particularly damaging to people who are African-American and Latino who happen to live in the cities. And oh, by the way, you might want to check out the media tomorrow, because you're going to find that Gary Arfield from the UCLA in California and Paul Trachtenberg from Rutgers University just reported today on what they refer to as apartheid schools in the state of New Jersey. And they find that schools are more racially segregated in New Jersey than are they any other state in the country. And what they define as an apartheid school is apartheid is a school that has less than 1% of white population. So we're talking about deep pockets of racial isolation in the public schools in the state of New Jersey. And so there are some suggestions that the NAACP is supporting, because it is a constitutional requirement that really hasn't been addressed, that the schools in the state of New Jersey are supposed to be racially integrated. So we're going to pursue that from a different number of different levels.
So, Daryl, I think that is a great overall of what New Jersey is doing. So.
Absolutely, and I would like to take this opportunity to thank President Harris for his tenure, for his leadership, for his counsel, and for his friendship. So thank you very much for being on the show this evening.
Well, I want to say that this is not a job that you can do alone, so I'm very proud to have people in the trenches on the local level like Calandus Francis, who has been in Camden and covers the bases very, very well. Because if Camden doesn't find people listening to him, they are likely to get a court order saying that they need to respond. And Tom Reynolds, you may not realize, is one of the youngest state branch presidents in the state, and he's also one of the youngest presidents of the NAACP unit in the country. And
yes,
he and his buddies of his age group has made a tremendous impact on Rosalind Brock, our national chairman, and Ben Jealous, our president and CEO. So we're talking about extremely competent, dedicated, and effective people in the civil rights movement. So thank you. I appreciate the compliment, but it's not mine alone. I can only do these things with the support of a lot of people who have vision, commitment, and courage.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Tom.
Yes.
Okay. Is Richard there?
No, he's not. They're still in the gospel extravaganza, getting their honoring pastors throughout the state. So.
Well, real quick, can you advocate for the leadership team 2013?
I am so glad you brought that up, actually. So this year is an election year for the state conference, and I got a phone call a couple months ago from Richard Smith, asking if I would be on his ticket as he runs for president. Richard has been one of the people who has been a worker in the NAACP. He's been the person who's been convention chair for our annual convention. He has brought in, you know, hundreds of thousands of dollars to help us make sure that we can take this, you know, that we can go to court, that we can afford to do those sort of things, that we can afford to make sure that his organization continues to work. He's the sort of person who doesn't hold personal grudges, and he's the type of person that has been able to just do what needs to get done. He's the president of the Greater Vineland branch. And he assembled a team that includes Adrian Sanders, who's the president of the Asbury Park Neptune branch. If you ever want to see a woman who's been so strong in education, that has held a rally on education in Kansas, or in Trenton, sorry, she's the woman that you want to have on your side when it comes to making sure civil rights happen.
So she's running for our first vice president. Then we've got Anthony Kierton, the president of the Bergen County branch. You know, he's been, first of all, he was named the number one president in the state of New Jersey last year. He has been extremely, revitalized the branch, taking it to a whole new level. You go to any of his events and you'll see almost every elected official out there because they know that Bergen County branch is about getting the work done and making sure that people have their rights. He had he worked with the teachers to make sure that the teaching aides don't lose their health insurance. And even though, and for some reason in the town where the Board of Education looked like us, they decided that the employees that look like us don't deserve health insurance. But he was able to organize hundreds to make sure that their issues were heard. Then you have our third vice president candidate, Loretta Winters. We're going to say happy belated birthday to her. Her birthday was yesterday. She is the president of the Gloucester County branch. Gloucester County is an interesting place to be in the black. I don't want to say it's one of the last strongholds of the Klan, but you do have some interesting opinions in that area. And she's been very strong in making sure that, you know, the rights and the opinions of every minority are heard and made sure that they're treated fairly. Then you've got for our secretary. Now, a lot of people don't understand that. We mentioned it earlier when we talked about Rosa Parks and how she was secretary of her branch. The secretary is the person who does the hard work and the heavy lifting in the NAACP. And so we want to make sure that we have a secretary that is able to do that hard work and make sure that everybody is on the same page and have the same communication. So Richard had brought in Vivian Darks, who has been his right-hand lady for the State Convention Planning Committee. I mean, I've had the chance to work with her for the last couple of years, and she's been absolutely phenomenal. She comes from Jack and Jill, where she had been one of the leaders there and has proven herself to be a leader. I'm going to just run through quickly. We've got Sonia Harris versus... Oh, Richard Smith just showed up, actually. Want a chance to hear from him?
Absolutely.
Hello. Richard Plants mentioned Richard Smith is running for president of the New Jersey State Conference, and I believe with all of James Harris's backing on this one. So, Richard, why don't you say hi there? Good evening. Good to be here. Thank you for giving me the opportunity to be with you tonight. We were just talking briefly about the team you assembled. I mean, I know we don't have a whole lot of time, but I'm sure we can, you know, go through and talk about, you know, what you see. Well, we're just excited about the vision that we have for the future. We think we got the right people at the right time for the right reason. It's big shoes to fill. Following behind James Harris, who has done an extraordinary job over the last 8 years. We are proud to have his support. James is not going anywhere. We still want to have James with us because I need him with me, behind me, beside me to help us to continue to fight the good fight for civil rights, social justice, and equal opportunity. We need boots on the ground, and we need to be more empowered ever before and more committed than ever before. So you brought up this great quote from Reverend Barber, who was born with
one of our national board members, Reverend William Barber from the North Carolina State Conference of the NAACP, talked about how those who have gone before us have done so much more with so much less. And now it is our challenge to do so much more with so much more. And so we got to get revitalized. I'm a great, a big football fan, and I've been talking to folks that we've gone across the state these past several months, and we talk about this whole thing where this football coach said that fatigue is the enemy of us all, and meaning that when you're tired physically, when you're tired mentally, you can't face up to the challenges, and I think that in our community, in this organization, sometimes we have spent more time focusing our attention on fighting each other and not directing our attention on fighting for civil rights and social justice. So we need to get back in shape so that when we go out on the field, that playing field is level. You got folks standing on the other side, our adversary, those who are against the civil rights community. They're standing over there strong, chest poked out, heads high, looking at us as we're sucking wind. So we got to get in shape so that we can make sure that we continue to move forward. And we can't lose ground at this point. We cannot lose ground, and they're trying to take away the civil rights of our heroes fought for years, and we take a lot of that.
Absolutely. Yeah, I agree. We talked with who your team was. With Sonia Harris, Tony, Lavinia, and Loretta, myself, a treasurer.
Yes.
I mean, I think that right now, what we want to see is just people come down to Atlantic City,
mm-hmm.
enjoy the program that we put together.
Without a doubt.
Yeah, we've got some great speakers coming.
Yes, we do.
Want to nip in today?
Yes, we do. Tomorrow morning, we have Dr. Mark Lamont Hill. You know him from BET. He is also a CNN and Fox contributor. He will be here tomorrow morning for our kickoff breakfast, honoring unsung heroes. We move into our legislative luncheon, where we have the immediate past president of Delta Sigma Theta Sorority Incorporated, Dr. Cynthia Butler McIntyre, will be with us. We also have tomorrow night the former president and CEO of the NAACP, Kwesi Nkrumah. So we're looking forward to that. We're going to have some great workshops, economic empowerment, education, housing, AXO, Homeland Security, health. So if you want a wealth of information, stuff that you can take back to your communities and have the tools necessary to continue to fight the good fight, we invite you to join us down here in Atlantic City tomorrow and all
through
the
summer.
Wow.
Well,
thank you. Wow.
So, Eddie, I got a question for you. If I send over that membership application, are you going to fill it out?
I still need to read some bylaws and stuff, but I'm getting pretty convinced.
Getting pretty convinced. I'll take pretty convinced. We can rehash it that another week.
Hey guys.
We got 60 seconds, guys. We got a minute.
Every once in a blue moon, I have a poem that comes to me that I write, and I wonder, what in the world did this come from? Well, that just happened to me yesterday. And it just dawned on me why, and I'm going to read it to you really quickly. It says, "You judge me by my skin color and consider me inferior. Then turn around and tan or spray your skin in hopes to match my exterior. You ridicule my racist potential, and you are quick to quote our low test scores, but deny us every time we ask for our schools to have books like yours. You belittle and degrade me by slandering me with your words, but I'm realizing that your hate is rooted by your love of my holistic abilities, which makes your hate just love backwards. If I could just see me the way you see me subconsciously, my self-esteem would rise, I'd walk with pride, and my life would be full of prosperity. The more I think about why you feel the way you feel about me, the more I realize you are reacting in envy. Who would have thought that the investigation of why you hate me would dig up the love I have for myself buried deep within me? This analysis is therapeutically unwrapping what I find to be a special and highly valuable gift. So I will continue to analyze and therapeutically unwrap this prize of a gift, which is now my appreciated paradigm shift." That's it.
All right.
Great show. That's it.
That's the best of the show.
Closing out, Darryl.
All right, then I would like to thank Richard Smith. I would like to thank James Harris for their leadership, for their friendship to the show. Thank Tom for organizing the interviews for this evening. Thank Sig. Thank Ed. Thank Naz. That's all I got to say for tonight. Next week, SoCo, Southern Comfort Cafe. We're coming back. 504 Central Avenue, Orange, New Jersey. Man Up Show is coming back. That's all I got for this.
Good night, everyone.
Night.